Good evening, everyone. We're going to start this council meeting. I ask that we all rise for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Clerk, call the roll.
Mr. Raymond.
Present.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Mr. Cologne.
Present.
Ms. Daniels.
Present.
Ms. Pujatak.
Present.
Ms. Laird and Ms. Leon.
Moving on to citations, we have three citations this evening. They are not with us, but we are going to be thanking Thomas Richard Petfield and Lieutenant Michael DeLucio for years of dedicated service to the city. On to public comment. Oh, yep, we're going to approve the minutes. If there's no questions, the minutes stand approved. On to public comment. First public comment on subjects not being voted on with a 5-minute time limit. Turning to my sign-in sheet, the first person I have is Robert. I am sorry, I'm not going to mispronounce your last name. Can you pronounce your name again for me, sir?
Pardon me?
Can you pronounce your name again for me, sir? Robert.
Robert Drexinger.
Drexinger, thank you.
Good evening, and thank you.
Sir, can you, your mic's like, I can hear you, I'm sorry, I'm a little hard of thought.
I reclaim my time.
We won't start your time, can you reset that?
Started.
We're going to reset it, don't we?
Okay, thank you. Good evening, and thank you for this opportunity to expose systemic problems and misconduct by certain members of the Bethlehem Parking Authority. This pertains to the unlawful parking ticket number 396685, which was issued on August 8, 2025 at 5:46 p.m. My wife and I parked at Seal Stacks to hear our neighbor play in his band at the Arts Quest stage. We paid $5 at the street side kiosk adjacent to the ice ring without any problems using my credit card. We then drove to Center City, parked on East Market Street, and attempted to pay for parking no less than 10 times on two different kiosks the exact same way we had just paid at Steel Stacks. That was from 5 o'clock until 5:10 p.m. We kept getting the same message on the display each time. Maximum allowed time usage, park in another lot slash area, end of quote. I then snapped this picture at 5:10 to document the problem. After all, it was Music Fest and the meter maids were out in full force. Lo and behold, we returned to the car around 6:30 only to find that a $30 ticket, twice the normal parking fine, had been issued for exceeding parking time, end quote, despite the fact that the car had been parked there for only 36 minutes prior to the ticket being issued. Upon returning home on August 8th, I immediately went online and disputed the bogus ticket, along with the aforementioned facts and my complete contact information. To my utter amazement, I received a response from Garcia on August 12th, which stated, quote, after reviewing your dispute of ticket number 396685, it has been determined to be a valid ticket, end of quote, with the words valid ticket in bold letters. I was livid. After reaming out Garcia for his ineptness, I was contacted by his supervisor, Wells, on August 13th, who, among other things, openly admitted that, and I quote, I understand that there was a problem with the kiosks, her exact words. With that, I immediately demanded a magistrate hearing. At the December 3rd, 2025 hearing before Justice Manwaring, I presented all of my evidence, including the fact that BPA had somehow inflated the original fine of $30 to $65 on the summons. More on that later. The judge grilled the two BPA representatives until one of them was forced to admit that BPA was fully aware of what she termed, I quote, a glitch in the third-party software which controls the kiosk. At that point, it was game over for the BPA. Justice Manwaring proceeded to rule that since we had made multiple attempts to pay in good faith and that the BPA was fully aware of the third-party software issues, we were found not guilty. One could tell that he was less than happy with BPA's inept handling of the entire situation and that their continued malicious prosecution was totally out of line. He also admonished BPA for unlawfully inflating the fine from $30 to $65 on the summons, pointing out to them that according to the statute, the clock stops, the fine is locked and frozen whenever a defendant requests a hearing within 14 days. My demand for a hearing came 5 days later. I still want the face-to-face meeting with the mayor that I was promised by Salah White back in September, so they can turn over all of my proof and correspondence, which clearly demonstrates misconduct on the part of BPA members Garcia, Wells, and Fernstrom. The unlawful ticket should have been dismissed way back on August 12th when it was originally disputed. A fifth grader could have figured out without any problem. Fernstrom even responded by email to me that he was instructing his IT person to block my email. Why didn't he tell his IT guy to fix the damn problem with the third-party software? So, has the glitch been fixed? Or are more people falling victim to this egregious behavior? I do have more pertinent information and documentation pertaining to this issue, but due to the time constraints, I'll have to save the rest for my meeting with the mayor. The utter lack of transparency and accountability on the part of BPA must cease and desist immediately. Not only does it reflect poorly on them, which doesn't seem to bother them, but Bethlehem City government, which oversees it as well. Thank you for your time and attention. I expect to hear from the mayor's office in the very near future. Up until now, my further attempts to contact him have been ignored. And that includes a registered letter, which according to the U.S. Postal Service, he received on the morning of January 16th. I'll now be glad to answer any questions you might have. If anyone wants to view any of my exhibits, you are more than welcome to. And as Mr. Amon said, I am able to present my information to the board. Would that be through mail?
Well, thank you, Mr. Drexinger. I will say that you can speak with our parking authority liaison, and we're here after the meeting to speak as well. So if you want to hang out until after the meeting, I'm sure any number of council people will be more than happy to talk to you. And also feel free to forward any information to the city clerk's office, whatever exhibits you have.
Is that the clerk's office?
Yep, okay. The city clerk's right, office, the emails online. You can forward anything, and I'll make sure that...
Like I said, emails, photo, documentation, the whole nine yards.
Yep.
I'm an engineer, very thorough.
Gotcha. Feel free to hang out after the meeting so we can discuss further, or if you have to head out, I'll open everything to the clerk. Actually, you can head out to the hallway. Our parking authority liaison will speak with you now.
Pardon me?
You can head out to the hallway. Our parking authority liaison will speak with you now.
I'll meet with you.
Oh, okay.
All right, we're going to head on to the next public comment.
Well, wait a minute.
Okay,
may I speak in the first public? I just ran in the door.
Oh, I'm not. We're still in the list.
Oh, you're
so,
still in the list?
Yeah, I'll guess. Yes, sir. Don't
worry.
Okay,
all right, thank you.
I'm actually going to welcome Troop 82008, that meets out of Calypso Elementary School, for their time with us. So, Troop 82008, welcome to City Council.
Thank you, Council. The girls have been working, these juniors out of Calypso Elementary are working on their bronze award, where they have identified a problem within our community, and they have researched this problem and come up with some solutions, and they are here to ask for your help in their solution of this problem. So I'm going to let them talk to you about what they've been working on.
Hello, my name is Remy from Troop 82008, and we are here to talk about snow and ice on places like quarters of sidewalks for our bronze award project.
Hi, I'm Beatrice, and we have a problem. Corners and neighborhoods are not always shoveled, making taking a walk hard for kids walking to school, people in wheelchairs, older people, and others too.
Hi.
I'm Viv from the same troop, but there is a solution. The ordinance is about shoveling corners, such as property owners must clear snow and ice within 24 hours and showing a minimum of 3 feet clearance. Two, snow may not be shoveled into the street. And three, properties next to handicap ramps are responsible for ice. We will spread the word by one, making flyers and or posters showing who's affected, when they're affected, and how to fix it. Two, making videos about what's happening and how to fix it. That's what the video was before this.
Hi,
I'm Cora. This is how you can help. We've already researched the laws, made a video, and made posters. Now you can help by sharing our posters and video on the department's social media pages and sharing what people can do to help on your social media page.
Hi, I'm Fiona, and I'm going to be showing you guys some examples of what we mean by non-shoveled corners and shoveled corners. So this is an example of a non-shoveled corner. This is another one that is not a shoveled corner. And then this is not a shoveled corner either. So the last two I'm going to be showing you guys are actually two shoveled corners. So this one is a good corner. And then this one, the last one that I'm going to be showing you guys, you is a good corner as well.
Hi, my name is Becca, and we appreciate your time and encouragement. We just want to say thank you very much one last time, and we look forward to working with you to spread the word to shovel corners for pedestrians. Bye!
For the girls?
Our council rules, we don't engage in the question and answer portion, but great use of your time, ladies. I know we discussed it, you did amazing. Feel free to hang out and speak with our Director of Public Works if you have any interesting ideas. I'm sure Mr. Alcall would absolutely love to hear about it. And continue to send any information to council, the videos, any type of infographic that you would like shared. We'd have to talk with our, like, with the administration about IT policies, but I, as a council person, would be more than happy. I don't have a big social media following, but more than happy to share whatever infographics you all worked on. Excellent job, ladies. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Just giving them a moment to clear out, then we'll move back out to public comment. All right, so continuing on to public comment on things not being voted on this evening, that exhausted our list of sign-ins, but we will go around the room. So anyone to the left have a comment? Mr. Bader?
Hello, Harry Faber, 321 Georgia Avenue. Earlier in the week, Lehigh County passed a resolution condemning the rise of fascism in the country. It was a very close vote, 5 in favor, 4 against. It was certainly much closer than it should have been. I was quoted in WFMZ saying, quote, "Condemning fascism is really not that hard," end quote. I know, I am groundbreaking. What I really wish was quoted, however, is that condemning the rise of fascism is the bare minimum. I brought up in the meeting that fascism is a process with different degrees of intensification. It isn't an all or nothing phenomena. It doesn't occur in a vacuum out of nowhere. It slowly but surely encroaches and imposes itself. Every inch acquired, it will never get back without a fight. Fascism depends on ordinary people doing ordinary things, going about their days as if nothing is new. Fighting fascism requires extraordinary things. It requires courage in the face of uncertainty. And that is what I saw at Lehigh County on Wednesday. And that's what I'm calling on you all to follow suit. Follow the footsteps of Lehigh County and pass a resolution condemning the rise of fascism in this country. It is imperative, now more than ever, that we rise to the occasion. Opposing and resisting fascism is not just the bare minimum, it is our civic duty. As Dr. Martin Luther King said in his letter from Birmingham Jail, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Do the right thing." Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. Anyone else to the left?
Good evening. My name is Alex Miller. I live at 810 Monocacy Street. I'm here to speak once more about flock safety. I'd like to express my appreciation to those council members who
followed up with me via email and for the dialogue that Chief Cobb was willing to have with council at the last meeting. Last meeting, my comment was quite broad in scope, so I'd like to reply to some of the points that were raised and make a more specific case for terminating the city's agreement with Flock. One major consideration that we have not heard yet in recent discussion is any sort of positive case for continuing to do business with this company. I think it would be worth interrogating whether this service is so instrumental to the work of our department that we can overlook the mountain of evidence that Flock turns a blind eye to civil liberties abuses by ICE and police departments across the country. We've contracted for these services for a few years. Surely we now have something to show for it. To the chief's credit, it seems that Bethlehem Police Department has been a lot more thoughtful and measured in its engagement with Flock than other municipalities have been. However, Flock has also recently deceived much larger, much more well-resourced municipalities into accepting modifications to the company's updated terms of use. What will this city be able to do if Flock violates the terms of the city's agreement? The company raised $275 million in its latest fundraising round. It's simply not enough to be content with the fact that nothing has gone wrong yet. The city is simply unmatched. Even if the administration can make a convincing argument that Flock is of public benefit and very useful to the police department, we must still overcome the moral and ethical concerns that the administration itself has raised. We have an abundance of evidence that Flock will do what it wants, that it's at best ambivalent about supporting the work of ICE and providing a platform for abuses of Fourth Amendment rights. You'll recall last summer at the council meeting, immediately following the horrific kidnapping behind 510 Flats, one of the broader takeaways was just how powerless this city was in that moment, that the forces at play were so far beyond our control. Flock and its peers are part of these forces. We shouldn't be fearing what Flock's cameras and software purport to capture and solve. We should fear what this infrastructure means for our futures. One of the largest present threats to our freedom is our own federal government and the surveillance tools it harnesses to instill fear. Timothy Snyder conceptualizes freedom as a state of unpredictability, of mobility to explore our values and to live our truths. That the constant surveillance to which we are now subjected erodes our ability to be free and worsens the state of fear for our most vulnerable neighbors. Let's make the smart, responsible choice to make Bethlehem a little bit freer and our work with Flock.
Thank you. Anyone else to the left?
Starts
to the broad center
on not being voted on. Thank you. Yeah. That's okay, because I need to make sure I hang on to the last one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Martin Romero, 26 West Market Street. Dear elected leaders of the City of Bethlehem, on Tuesday, October 5th of 1976, City Council passed and then the Mayor signed Ordinance 1713 to establish the advisory board known as the Historic Architectural Review Board. The board was slated to have 9 members per subsection 1713.04. Currently, the board only has 6 members, a high vacancy rate of 33%, despite a number of once-in-a-life-generation decisions being made that have and will significantly affect the character and quality of life of the residents of this neighborhood for decades to come. As a resident of the Northside Historic District neighborhood since June of 1975, experienced in the renovation, restoration, and maintenance of a residence approved for construction by the Moravian Board of Elders on February 9, 1809, and as an avid student of local history since I moved here, I offer my services to our community as a voting member of the Volunteer Historic Architectural Review Board to fill one of the 3 seats that were vacant at the beginning of this calendar year. It would be an honor to help preserve the architectural character of this historic neighborhood where the first Moravian settlers chose to make their home in the winter of 1741. Thank you for your time and consideration. Sincerely, Mark Brown.
In the center, want to make public comments on something not being voted on this evening? Ms. Mary Jo?
didn't plan on speaking, but I have several concerns as far as the understaffed fire department. My father was a firefighter in Allentown, and when I have three sisters. When our mother passed, my father, we were all minors, and we cringed every time that siren went off. Fortunately, Allentown had full staff, so it wasn't as much of a problem as in Bethlehem. And watching one of the city council meetings where a councilwoman asked the fire chief what the majority of calls were that they received, and they said mostly medical. I'm here standing before you to say that I experienced three calls that were not medical. Two were for safety valves blowing on propane tanks, and one occurred in a heat wave in the middle of the summer. The firemen were passing out in my backyard. I was running water to them constant, and it just didn't seem to faze them. Another propane tank at the car dealership across the street from me also blew, and they were worried about that. And I also had them for a carbon monoxide leak in my house that I could not figure out where it was coming from. So they're not all for medical reasons, as one councilwoman seems to think. So I wish we did more for public safety instead of, while there's a housing crunch, I get it. You gotta work on the infrastructure before you can work on more housing. Otherwise, more people means you're gonna need more public servants. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McCall. Anyone else in the Broad Center wanna make public comments on something not being voted on? To the right, anyone wanna make public comment? Mr. Attalis.
I'm safer this way.
Nice. Don't get old, it really sucks. But anyway, Stephen Antalis.
Great talk to you.
As at the February 3rd meeting of council, the council approved the award of a contract to Center Republic Safety and Management LLC for the study of fire and EMS services. According to their website, policy, procedure, and standard operating policies are their main area of expertise. They also include police. If we recall, the November 18th, 2025 City Council meeting, the vast majority of speakers were firemen and their family members who clearly delineated the major problems of the fire department. It was not equipment or any material needs. It was clearly a major staffing problem, a problem which could impact public safety and a risk to the firemen for the as a result of excessive overtime. This study group will certainly speak to members of the fire department regarding any deficiencies, but we have already heard from them at this council meeting. The speaking group included not only basic firemen, but a number of high department officials. The problem is well identified by the public comments, which is staffing. So why not enlist the appropriate agency to address this problem? Might this not be the International Association of Firefighters, an agency whose chief focus is fire department personnel, since the Center for Public Safety covers too broad an area of civic activities, while the former covers the fire department only? The public knows the problem. The administration knows the problem. The fire department knows the problem. So why not go directly to the solution and solve the obvious problem by replacing the dismissed fireman? Let us ask Mayor why he is not doing this, since the problem will be solved and the city will save $83,000. Sadly, this council has dropped the ball. It has not supported the two council members who originally offered the obvious solution. So will this present council have the courage and will to support the lone council member who's doing the right thing by asking the right questions and pushing for the department to be properly staffed? It is a public safety issue. So council, do your job.
Thank you. Anyone else on the right want to go ahead, Artie?
Hi, I'm Artie Caratola, 813 Wofford Street, Bethel, Pennsylvania. Once told when I worked for Medi, the horse I know like me, a main man, they should have made me taller.
Yeah, can you get a little closer to
anyway,
the mic?
Anyway, the thing is, I want to talk about the city here in the streets, street department. Now, years ago, I wound up coming to city council for over 35 years. Finally wound up getting surveillance cameras all over the city where I was after to be happening. I didn't get any credit for it. I probably won't get credit for this one either. Here we go. When we have a lot of snow, the city goes ahead, gets the snow, and moves it about 2 miles or more away to unload it. Come on. You don't pay our taxes? Let's get heaters into the trucks to melt the snow and let it go down the nearest sewer. We'll move more snow a lot quicker, less manpower, less cost for the city. Just get some heaters into those trucks that go to snow. But however, maybe that will be done in another 30 years. But however, thing is, I'd like to say something. Mrs. Quayle isn't here, so she won't walk out on me. I want to say one thing about Jesus before we go. Jesus was a humble man. He was, and the most, written about and talked about person who ever walked this earth and maybe other earths as well. He didn't plan that to be. He was humble. He wasn't Democrat. He wasn't Republican. And he wasn't a politician in any way. He was for the people, not for politics. And he didn't get offended if someone said something that he didn't like about his Jewish race and throw the anti-Semitic word at them like it was a bullet coming from a gun. Actually, Jesus never carried a gun. He carried a cross. And he let himself be crucified by arrogant, belligerent, stupid people. But God bless you who use this anti-Semitic word as a bullet from the gun. Or you condone the use of this word. But keep in mind, it doesn't make us individuals like you any better. But we love you all the same, as Christians love you all the same, I should say. For the record, I got to know a lot of Jewish women throughout the course of my years. When he's 78 in June, 22nd. But I have to say one thing. Throughout the course of the years, all the Jewish women that I love, let me correct that. On the earth, I love them all the same as any non-whites. I want to make a statement here also. We need to correct the political situations going on in Facebook. And this has been going on for years, saying Jesus was a black man. He was from Jerusalem. He was white. Jewish people are white. They're not black. I want to make that clear. There's so many things on Facebook that need to be rectified. And maybe in our city, we need to be an example and try to correct those things that are being offensive
to people.
You have a blessed day. God bless.
Thank you, Mr. Caratola. And to correct the non-existent record, Mr. Piatek is with us, and guns weren't around until the 12th century. Does anyone else have public comment on something not being voted on? All right, moving on to public comment on things being voted on. I have no one signed up, so turning to the left, does anyone want to make public comments on something being voted on? To the center, does anyone want to make, sir?
I actually have one for you, so you can feel left out. Since I'll be asking you for your opinion, or your council members will be. So you have enough, let's see what I got here. One for you. If you'd like one, there you go.
I apologize for running in late, out of breath, but the young ladies from the Girl Scouts working on the Bronze Award were correct. Hurdling unshoveled corners and wing tips in the dark takes the breath out of me, unlike it did 50 years ago, including the two northern corners of New and Church Street opposite the plaza. Dear President Leon and members of City Council, on Tuesday, October 5th of 1976, City Council passed the, and then the mayor signed, Ordinance 1713 to establish the advisory board known as the Historic Architecture Review Board. The board was slated to have 9 members per subsection 1713.04. Section 1713.05 states clearly that a quorum will consist of at least 5 members. If these, and the document I've given to you all, if this accompanying councilmanic appointment is correct, that one member named as participating and voting at the HARP meeting on February 4th, 2026, had their 5-year term expire, where it says in that councilmanic appointment, quote, this appointment is effective through January 2026, period. And no action to reappoint this one member to the board has been taken, and none could be found in the previous 8 city council meeting agendas stretching back into October of 2025, although I may have missed it, I'm not perfect. Then the meeting occurred with only 4 members with clear authority to act as members of this advisory board to city council. If these facts are correct, then there clearly was not a quorum to conduct business, and there can be no vote on any of the certificates of appropriateness sent by HARP to city council that emerged from the meeting held in this rotunda on Wednesday, February 4th, 2026. Although this is unfortunate for those members of the community who thought they had obtained a coveted certificate of appropriateness, it is a reality that the guidance of the authorized members of HARB still impacts the decisions of City Council, and therefore the board's actions impact the property rights of individuals of both those seeking approval for renovations, construction, and modifications, but also of their neighbors, so due process requirements attach to both the applicants appearing before HARB and the citizens whose neighborhood is affected by the board's advice to city council. To ensure that the actions of the board cannot be challenged for failing to adhere to council's published ordinance and therefore risk putting any later decisions at risk for due process challenge, the board should take every action to ensure that a clear quorum is present. Possibly HARP could institute procedures to review and ensure that all members have a clear and currently valid appointment, and also by making sure there is more than just the bare number of members present to meet a quorum. Maybe HARP could request that the administration and city council diligently fill multiple vacancies on the same boards. As a taxpaying citizen of our fair city, I respectfully request that you obtain a ruling from your solicitor regarding the legality of proceeding with any items under section 10 of tonight's agenda. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Anyone else in the center
Wilshire, 1890 Eaton Avenue. Many people in Bethlehem agree that there is something special about the city of Bethlehem. Many of those would agree that our history is a significant part of that. And many of those would agree that Main Street is a significant part of the history. It is a primary reason why people enjoy living here and enjoy coming here. Former Mayor Gordon Maurer once told me that his biggest mistake as mayor was urban renewal. And later he realized the future was around the corner on Main Street. There is some similarity between urban renewal and the present penchant to build apartment buildings almost anywhere. For make no mistake about it, a seven-story apartment building immediately behind Main Street businesses will irrevocably detract from the Main Street ambiance. There's no way that a person will be able to look at Main Street and not also notice a seven-story building hovering over the shops in the middle of the block. Not at the end, like the Hotel Bethlehem, which also contributes to the ambiance. If the building is approved, it will be a precedent, cited by other developers who will further detract from the historical charm of Main Street. This reminds me of the fable about killing the goose that was laying golden eggs. So why do some people think this oversized building is a good thing? First, there are some people who may like change for its own sake. Anything different can be interesting. For such people, I say that not all change is progress. Other people say we have to either grow or die. This, I'm afraid, is balderdash. There are many places that aren't growing but are thriving. I have some familiarity with two such places, Westfield, New Jersey, and Larchmont, New York. True, they are rather wealthy suburbs and or exurbs of New York City, but the latter is what Bethlehem is starting to become. What kind of exurb do we want to be? And when I say we, I mean all the people of Bethlehem. Still, other people may like the idea that as Bethlehem grows, it becomes more important. Being important is nice, but more important is being a meaningful place to live. Other people may be intrigued by the notion that more people will mean more activities and new kinds of activity with additional stimulation. This argument has some validity, but like so many other things in city planning, there is a trade-off. Is additional stimulation worth the reduction of a sense of calm in Bethlehem, especially as compared to Allentown? Calmness invites reflection, which is a fertile context for creativity. There is a reason why many authors do their writing in the country and then come to the cities for marketing and awards. Another argument that has been made is that even luxury apartments help with affordable housing. By providing opportunities for existing residents to move up and provide vacancies in housing that is less expensive. This might be called the trickle-down theory of housing. I believe this effect to be rather small. Besides, it is much more productive to attack the problem of affordable housing head-on. As an economist, I have developed a few ideas on this to be presented at another time. Another argument that has been made is that more residents mean more tax revenues. This is true, but what is not as well known is that residents consume more in services than they pay in taxes. Businesses, on the other hand, pay more in taxes than they consume in services. This is why cities all across America compete for more businesses. They do not compete to build more and more apartment buildings. One more paragraph. Still another argument that has been made is that the United States is a welcoming country, so Bethlehem should be a welcoming city for the immigration from New Jersey and New York City. But the two thoughts are not comparable, because there's plenty of open land in the U.S., but not in Bethlehem. So substantial immigration to Bethlehem means bigger and taller buildings. Is that what the people of Bethlehem want? If not, Where is it written that people who do not live here now get to dictate what the Bethlehem of the future will look like? And Mary Jo will read the last two paragraphs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Turning to the center again. Anyone else want to make public comment?
Last two paragraphs.
Got it. All right. Yes, Mary Jo.
The final argument is made on behalf of developers so that they can make more money. I wonder if a six-story building would still be profitable, perhaps a five-story building, or even a four-story building. A three-story building would not be visible from Main Street. It has even been suggested that a city park would be nice there. It could be a playground for children supervised by one parent while other parents are shopping. This would be good for the Main Street businesses. I often think about Churchill's remark that the invasion of North Africa in World War II was not the end, nor was it the beginning of the end, but it was perhaps the end of the beginning. If this seven-story building is built in this location, it will not be the end of the beginning, it will be the beginning of the end for Bethlehem as it has been known. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in the center want to make comments on something being voted on this evening? Anyone to the right want to make public comments on Mr. Antox?
Stephen Antox, I didn't intend to speak tonight, but from the speakers who spoke on 10E, I'd like to add this. Some time ago at council meeting, Article 1714, Historic Preservation of the South Side, has turned into a paper tiger. It doesn't mean anything. As a result of that, the South Side has suffered a rape. And I mentioned then that the person left Bethlehem for 50 years and came back and took a walk on Main Street. They would see Main Street the way it was when they first left. If they took the same walk at 3rd and New, they would probably die of a coronary from shock. I mean, it's a different city. It's a different city. Why? Because the developer dollar overruled Article 1714. From New Street to the entrance to the bridge, it used to be a beautiful area. And a lovely diner, auto dealer, a taxi cab company. What's going up there now is a seven-story, it's ugly. It's overpowering. I drive by quite routinely, and I'm shocked. So, in a sense, that cancer that has eaten up the South Side is crossing the river. Why? Because Article 1713 is also becoming a paper tiger. Why? Because it appears that developer dollar is beginning to take rein on Main Street area. And the argument that Hotel Bethlehem defies that. Well, it was built in 1926. There were no ordinances then to cover that. And as a result, the hotel acts as the end pin of the street. It's a fitting building for the site it's at. And it adds to the charm of this north side. So, if council agrees with what's been said in terms of Bethlehem having a special charm, then their vote should be accordingly. Preserve 1713.
Thank you. Anyone else on the right want to make public comment on something being voted on? Mr. Carthel.
I'll use this one, but you can't see me over here anyway. So everybody that's watching on, you know, on the internet, I'm here. Artie Caratola, 813 Lawford Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, South Side. Now sure, the developers are raising the point probably, change has to come. Look at New York City, the Empire State Building, all the big buildings in New York City. Manhattan, not New York City, Manhattan. I lived in the Bronx. I also been to Queens. I've been to Brooklyn. They have areas where there's 2-3-story buildings still kept to the historical way that the city was in Brooklyn, in Queens, in the Bronx. There are skyscrapers all over the place. They don't have skyscrapers going ahead and ruining the areas. We have historical landmarks in Bethlehem. They could find places to build those large buildings somewhere else, not where the historical landmarks are on Main Street and where we have on the south side. It's been destroyed enough. We don't need this. Not in our city. Why don't they move their buildings in the areas where there's trouble in Allentown? And get rid of the ghetto situation where there's violence happening. We have one of the most safest cities in the country, not Pennsylvania, the whole United States. We don't need to have to make ourselves a New York City. We are Bethlehem, the little town of Bethlehem. Maybe not exactly that capital town, but we still are Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. We are have this historical city. We ought to keep that. We should try our best to keep it. Let them move to Easton. Let them move to, I don't care. But not here in my city or in your city. Why should they destroy the appearance and the historical landmarks of your city? Say no to it. God bless.
Thank you. Does anyone else want to make public comments on something that you voted on this evening? That concludes public comment. Moving on to old business. Do any members of council have any old business they would like to do with council now?
Chief, have you got any of that data together for the trips up to Lehigh and St. Luke's and Raven?
Aside from the 5 years of data we provided back in November, December, we have had no time to try to acquire additional data. I explained the complexity of all these different numerical addresses that would have to be searched, and based on things we've been dealing with, I've not had any time to try to do that.
So did the 5-year data show that?
Yes.
It did?
Yes, that was all provided November, December to the clerk's office. We ran 5 years of data for both universities and referenced both on and off campus properties.
All right. I'll get it from our
clerk.
But there's no, I'm not talking about the off student or off campus student housing. I'm just talking about on the campus itself. Isn't that pretty easy to find out just for on campus?
No, because every building and property has a separate numerical address that has to be searched for calls. So it is all included in that data that was previously provided.
I would presume though that most or if not all of the calls going up to Lehigh are the Schrader house over on the south side, correct?
No, I wouldn't agree to that. No,
what?
No, it's pretty fairly spread across the campus. Different dormitories, fraternities, sororities,
yeah.
Classrooms and labs. It's very spread.
I'm just trying to get like an accurate reading without having you to do a whole lot of research on it. So if you could talk to the houses themselves, and the guys in charge of different firehouses, and just have them take a running tally every time that they're running up to Lehigh or Raven or up to St. Luke's, you know, on a daily basis. Maybe, I mean, it's something they could just text you at the end of every week. I mean, it would be a hard to, you know, tally.
We'll see what we can do.
I'd appreciate it. I'm just trying to get an accurate number of the amount of services that Lehigh University is using. Raven's using it, St. Luke's is using.
Yeah, I don't think the historical data that we provided would change very much. I think you could base that on the data that was previously provided. I think it's pretty fair and accurately displayed over the number of years as far as an average is concerned. And I would be willing to bet that those numbers really haven't changed dramatically this year from last year.
Yeah, is there someone in each house that you could possibly just send them a text, hey, you know, starting next week, could you just keep a tab on how many times?
We run four different platoons of personnel that run in and out of each firehouse differently, so that would be a little challenging. We can look at trying to come up with a solution.
Yeah, I'm trying to get data for like a month, you know, a month or two, just so we have an idea of, I mean, I was told by fire department personnel that on some days we're running up there three times a day, which to me seems like that's astronomical. They say, but it's every day. They say, you know, every day it's at least once. Sometimes it's two and three times a day. If it is, we need to sit down and have a discussion with them about, you know, trying to compensate somehow. And maybe it's something that the council and administration and Lehigh University can get together. And again, I don't know if it's something, you know, that we could charge a yearly fee to, you know, students, whether it's a $50 fee or whatever. I don't know, but there's got to be a way. There's got to be a way to do it. I talked to our solicitor about she had written ordinances for cities and townships locally that every time a fire department or EMS goes out to a crash, there's a bill that goes to that person's, you know, whoever was involved with the crash or was responsible for it. There's a bill that goes to that insurance company and they're compensated. I'm going to be presenting that later on, probably in a month or early next month, as a new ordinance, because we have to try to find a way, and I think you would totally agree with this. We just had a fire the other day, which we had to call in. We didn't have enough personnel on, so we had to call in Allentown and Bethlehem Township, correct?
Natural Fire Company of Bethlehem Township, that is correct.
Right, and Allentown.
Yes.
And I remember when my brother was mayor, which I was against at the time, not him being mayor, but he closed down the Dewberry fire station. I was totally against that, right? But I wasn't involved with city politics at the time. And I told him at the time, you know, I think it's a bad move because everybody, all the neighbors and all the citizens, and I don't know if you were part of the force at the time, but
yes, I was.
This place was filled up with people worrying about response times if that Dewberry facility got shut down. I can't imagine the response times of coming from Allentown to Bethlehem Township versus just having one little station on Dewberry Avenue closed down versus using Catasauqua Road station or the Easton Avenue Station or Broad Street. If they're having to come, there's got to be a delay in response if we're calling in people from Allentown. And it's got to be a longer delay, a longer time for them to get there if they're coming from a longer distance, correct?
Well, there's a multitude of reasons that we start off with the city of Allentown, and one being as part of the collective bargaining agreement, which we must abide by when we're doing call-outs of our personnel. We call in off-duty personnel. And then we also call other IAFF local departments, as outlined in the collective bargaining agreement, once our personnel have been called. So that is something that can't be resolved here tonight. That's something that has to be discussed between the union and the city administration.
No, I agree.
One advantage to calling Allentown, for example, is they're already in the firehouse, they're there, they're ready to go. We provide them mutual aid, they provide us mutual aid. The response time, yes, is greater than a company that would leave Broad Street, for example. But they're all there, they're willing to go, they're ready to respond, and they can do so pretty quickly.
Yeah, but as you know, minutes are hours when you're involved with a fire.
I'm aware, yes.
Right. So my whole goal is to make sure we're staffed properly in the city of Bethel. So we don't have to call in people from outside of the city of Bethel, which is taking a longer response. That's my only goal with this. So it's something we'll have a further discussion on it as we move forward.
Absolutely.
But I appreciate it. So on the study, Mayor, on the study, is there any idea, will the study be completed before June?
Councilman Callahan, you're dipping into new business that we were going to, that's the old business. You can ask about the study under new business, but we are closing the loop. So can you just say that for the next one?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
And one more thing under old.
Yeah.
Mayor, I don't know if it's possible, but when it's not just me, but I know there's other people on council that feel the same. When council comes up with some questions, or is there possibly that you could have somebody just jot down the notes of the questions that council has asked for responses from, and then make sure that they're being followed up on?
Can I interject real quick? Is that there was something that I wanted to talk about with the agenda in general when it comes to new and old business, and that was part of the conversation that I was going to have.
Okay.
So, like, I know that we've talked about when are appropriate times for discussion, and we had talked a little bit sometimes with council members one-on-one about what new business is for and what old business is for. I think old business is a really good time to close the loop on existing questions. Sometimes we discuss things as a council, ask requests from the administration or other council members. So I think old business would be a really good time.
If you're bringing that up, I have no problem waiting. I just want to make sure that if there's anybody on council that's asking a question, that there's follow-up and feedback from the administration at a later date.
Yeah, which I think old business is the appropriate time to do it, so all of council is operating with the same information. I know a lot of times these things lies in internal memos or emails, but it's not a bad idea to just readdress it at council under old business to just close any existing loops without asking any questions.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other old business from members of council? Moving on to new business. Any council member have new business that they would like to address?
I do, actually. Yeah, this is actually regarding the snow. Ms. Collins, you might be able to assist with this.
Snow?
Well, it's snow related, somewhat. A number of people, as you know, have complained about the snow removal. I know we're limited with people and equipment and things of that nature, and the way this storm took place with the freezing temperatures literally for weeks after, it was hard to get rid of. I understand that. But my concern is property owners not clearing the snow at all, or a very narrow path where you literally have to put one foot in front of the other to walk down the street. My question to you is, there any possible way where a code inspector, and I brought this up a long time ago about other issues, can literally go out and find these people? Because, and it's not that I want people to pay fines, I don't, believe me, but I don't think they're going to get it until they get a fine and realize that, you know, it's not just about clearing the snow, it's a safety issue. It's an accessibility issue. You know, there's handicapped people that were literally stuck in their homes for weeks at a time because of this, because they couldn't navigate the sidewalks and the corners.
I will defer to Mr. Alcohol, who's the Director of Public Works. And people do ask this often, you know, does the Housing Inspection Department handle snow removal for individual property owners? And actually, under the ordinance, the Department of Public Works does handle enforcement of that ordinance.
Okay,
with
I didn't realize that. My apologies.
I assume you're talking about snow on sidewalks.
Yeah, the sidewalks and the corners.
Right away.
Yeah, our ordinance calls for purview over that would be the Department of Public Works.
Okay, my apologies, I didn't realize that.
And we don't aggressively sort of, we don't go out there and look for issues and cite folks, but we have in the past, and we continue, we get complaints from property owners that someone's sidewalk has not been shoveled within 24 hours after the end of a storm. Mm-hmm. We do send inspectors out. We notify them to address immediately. They don't comply. We have cited. But like I said, we do it on a complaint basis, mostly because of lack of resources to be able to go around and do that more proactively and aggressively.
And just to add to that, Councilman, there's also the issue that just like there are, it's a challenge for people that are moving, we also at times try to be sensitive to the homeowner. Because the homeowner might be 80 or 90 years old or might also have disabilities. So trying to balance those two things is something that I know Mr. Alcohol tries to do, because it is a balance between wanting to make sure that all of the sidewalks get safe as soon as possible, but also understanding that for some people it is it's a physical challenge to do it. So we try to be sensitive to that situation, but also balance public safety, but it is a hard balance as far as those two things.
And I understand that completely, especially for the seniors. I actually clear sidewalks for my senior neighbor, so I understand that completely. But
and I will say, in general, most of the time we have good compliance. Unfortunately, for extreme events like we just had, and again, the key part was the extended cold after the event. It made a lot of areas very, very difficult to address, not just for older folks, but even younger folks, just because of the nature of snow and the freezing temperature and that sort of thing. And, you know, we try to work with the residents like we do on many other issues that are difficult to tackle, sidewalk deficiency, trees, what have you, and we just stay on it until there's compliance.
I appreciate the answer, sir. I do. And Mr. Mayor Reynolds, My concern, again, is that it's continuously happening. And it's not just snow. There's a lot of ordinance issues, codes that are being violated, that people are consistently, continuously getting away with, and it's devaluing our communities. And I understand that, you know, there might be a lack of available inspectors. I know we just hired two, and it's a fee payroll for them, right? They're paid by fees for services or what fines or whatever else is coming in, inspection fees and things of that nature. So I'm just lost as to why we can't have a dedicated person to make sure that codes are being enforced.
In this instance, that's not how it's funded. It's funded basically.
Well, I'm not speaking just on snow, though. I'm speaking on everything in its totality. I'll let that go. I'm not going to beat a dead horse with that. My second thing is I want to thank you for getting to Broadway, but only half of Broadway was done. And I don't know if your guys are still out there clearing snow or not.
We are.
Okay. Is there any schedule for the remainder of Broadway, southeast, the Five
yes.
Points, to Fountain Hill?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. That's all I have.
I would like to, Pat, I don't know when we can fit this in, but I've talked to President Leon, and I'd like to call for at some point if we try to fit on our schedule. I know we're kind of busy, but sometime in, you know, within a couple months, a committee of the whole meeting on the parking authority, if possible. There's a couple issues. Mayor, you weren't here earlier, but there was a gentleman that was here that, you know, had a major problem with the parking authority, went to court, and the court ruled in his favor. So I just think that there's an issue going on with the Walnut Street garage that bids were accepted, bids were open. And then the research that I'm seeing sees that there was, after the bids were open, there was another bid that was allowed to be put in, and the piping on the, in the specs that the Bethlehem Parking Authority had asked for on the piping of the fire water system on the sprinkler system was very specific, and I've had conversations and emails with our solicitor and President Leone and also Mr. Furnstrom and Mr. Brocknell, and there's just been a little bit of a lack of transparency, I feel like, on their part on some of the questions that I'm asking. So my main concern in doing this is just to ensure that the company that got the bid on the sprinkler system installed the proper piping, the piping that was on the job and that was halfway installed at the halfway point. Some other professionals went over there and took pictures of the piping. It wasn't the proper appropriate piping that was in the bid. And I brought it up to Mr. Furnstrom. He, according to the solicitor for Parking Authority, they found it on the punch list when they were going through the punch list. And apparently it's being looked at, but I want to make sure that the citizens and residents of Bethlehem, the taxpayers of Bethlehem and the Parking Authority got the proper piping. There's one piping that was on the bids. It was very specific. It was a more expensive piping. I think it's like a 25 or 30 year life piping, and the piping that was installed, according to the pictures, was a cheaper piping. So I want to make, and along with some valves also, and you know, it's $1 million job, you know, on the piping itself. So I want to make sure that the correct piping. My only goal is to ensure that the Parking Authority got exactly what they paid for. It was put in the specs. I talked to Mr. Furnstrom about it. At no time during the construction did the company that got the bid on the sprinkler system ever request a change order on the specs. So my whole thing is make sure that we got what we paid for. And I think everybody would agree with that. That's the kind of important thing to make sure. We spec'd out this. They quoted it on that spec. But apparently that's not what was delivered. And I just want to make sure that we are getting what we paid for. So 15 years down the road, there's not a failure in the piping system because of the less capable piping. So that's my whole goal. And the other thing is dealing with some of the responses from the Bethlehem Parking Authority to citizens and things like that. I don't know. I'm going to do some research on this, but I know at some point, Mayor, I don't know if you've got the answer to this either, but I know at some point the Parking Authority was in-house, was in the city. I'm not sure when we created the Parking Authority, and I like our solicitors. I don't know if your solicitor wants to look into it also, but I just feel like that Parking Authority is, if you listen to anybody that deals with them, they're a little unresponsive in dealing with people. And I want to have a committee of the whole meeting to discuss a lot of these things and possible changes that could be made. I don't know if it's even legally possible to bring to dissolve the Parking Authority and bring it back in-house under your administration. I think so. I think personally that they'd be a lot more responsive towards citizens and residents and city council members if it was under your authority. And it's just a matter of, you know, I'm not sure it would be an easy thing to do, but there's just a lack of response from the Parking Authority that I feel almost every citizen I have to deal with just feels like they're not being listened to at all. And I have had that experience. I asked them for a right to know request on the piping. And the procedures that they made me go through and then sending the information with a one-time code, I opened it and I couldn't open it again. Then I have to ask them again to send it again. And then they wanted to charge the city of Bethlehem $747 for the right to know paperwork. And I told them in no uncertain terms, you are out of your effing mind if you think that you are going to charge the city of Bethlehem for you to copy papers on a right to know request from a city council. I mean, that to me was bizarre. And then they folded and they agreed to email it again and to some professionals that who are a little bit more knowledgeable than I am. So I just think that there's some discussion that needs to have, and I'd appreciate if Mr. Furnstrom and maybe even his solicitor could come in here and deal with some of the questions that I have, and I'm sure other people on council have, about the parking authority and the lack of responses.
So I think the parking authority was created probably about 50 years ago, and I'm just being completely honest with you. It's like, I have no intention of going down a road of dissolving the parking authority. They have long-term debt structures as far as their garage is concerned. They are a separate authority. They are operating independently, even though they are a creation of the City of Bethlehem, as authorities are, I believe, under the Pennsylvania Municipal Authority Act. Once they are created there, the idea of unwinding one of them, especially if it's not like a special purpose authority, which you have the ability to be able to unwind more quickly, is just both not something that is feasible, and I also don't really have an interest in doing that. I will tell you as a whole, and this predates Mr. Fernstrom, is 20 years ago, I would say that I thought the Parking Authority was a financial disaster as far as how much money we were losing, the fact that they were operating under a very like 1964 parking mindset, where you could say yes to everybody, understanding rather than understanding that parking is a system. And I think there's been a lot of progress that's been made as far as understanding about how we turn cars over, how we encourage long-term parkers with the garages, how we turn over cars on the street and things like that. And as far as the bid stuff, I mean, I don't have any idea about what happened on what bids there. And I think that's a conversation for the parking authority as far as that's concerned. But I would say as far as individual complaints and things like that, you know, I would take those up with the parking authority as far as what they.
And I couldn't agree with you as far as there's been a lot of great things that the parking authority has done. I think going to a digital system is a huge thing versus the cash system that was there before with the coins. I think they've done a great job with the mobile parking and the apps and all that stuff. There's a lot of great things that have happened. But I think with them getting bigger and bigger and bigger, their ability to respond to people, and especially council members asking questions. I mean, I was a little floored back by, you know, the attitude that I got back from them, and just asking some simple questions about, hey, was this the proper piping put in? And asking for the right to know request for the specs and the bids. And the loopholes that I was put through seemed a little extensive. And I mean, I would think that everybody on this dais here, and also the parking authority and Mr. Fernstrom, would want to ensure that the proper piping for our safety system, our fire safety sprinkler system, was exactly what we spec'd out. I mean, it's very clear on the spec sheets that a specific piping had to be installed, and it's pretty clear that a specific piping, a much cheaper piping, was not installed. So, and again, to be fair to the parking authority and the solicitor, after I brought that up, they started looking at it, and that was one of the things that they said is on their punch list. So I don't know how it's going to. I know that the garage is open; it has a CO. So I don't know how long of a time the punch list would be, or to take. You would think that the punch list would be done prior to getting the CO and opening up the garage. But my whole goal is to find out. And the problem is this, and it's not even a big problem. You can't tell the type of piping that was installed by the outside of it once it's closed up. So the system has to be drained. It's like 5 minutes, procedure is to drain it of water. And then a couple of the pipes just have to be opened up so pictures can be taken in certain areas to check to make sure that the higher quality piping that was on the parking authority bid was what was delivered and installed.
Yeah, and I can't speak to that individual situation. I know the punch lists often, and there's a different process, and you know, Mr. Simonson's a good person to talk about this, as far as what you need to be able to get a CO to open, and then what you need to be able to close out your contract and things like that afterwards with your general contractor, your subcontractors, and things like that. So oftentimes, those like punch list items, I mean, they're designed to take 3, 4, 5, 6 months. I don't know if that's the situation here, but oftentimes it's not you just don't have the time, and then you would have a building that would be being able to be occupied as far as people going back to be able to take a look at things about whether or not you put in the right caulking that you want to make sure to close out your contract and things like that.
So sometimes things pop up there, and once again, I'm talking generically because I don't know as far as this individual situation is concerned, that like they go through the systemic kind of, this takes a couple months, 3, 4, 5 months to close out a contract. And then sometimes what happens, and I've seen this in almost every construction contract I've ever helped, worked with, and so on and so forth, is somebody will come back, and if, especially for the larger bids, and let's say it's $8.7 million, and there's a conversation where it's just like, hey, you didn't put this here, you didn't put this here, we said we were going to have the rubber stoppers there, and they either do it, or there's a reimbursement, or there's like kind of those things back and forth. So once again, I can't speak to this, but I can speak to the idea that like whatever is the process that, you know, Mr. Brothel and them need to follow to be able to close that out, they're gonna go through it.
Yeah, my whole goal is to ensure that the city of Bethel, that we all got, the Columbus Park Authority got exactly what we paid for.
I would just make one point, is that like it's not the taxpayers, it's the ratepayers. So the taxpayers, which is going back to the Wall Street Garage, like they only come to the taxpayers when somehow they need to have some debt backed or whatever, and so on and so forth. The Parking Authority is funded by ratepayers.
Right.
So that could be people in the city of Bethlehem, that could be people in Emmaus, New Jersey, New York.
But the city does back some of the bonds on some of the parking garages.
I think there's only one left that we
need to work on.
On New Street, I think, is the last one. Because once again, to their credit, their financial situation has improved. So there were previous bonds that we backed that the city got out of. But as far as like the backing of the bond is concerned, as far as being, you know, the financial support, as far as that's concerned, like that's not the same as like the taxpayers paying taxes to the Parking Authority, because they are a separate entity and authority that are funded by ratepayers.
Right.
So like you could be somebody like my mom, who's never parked in a garage and paid in 50 years after she moved from Westfield, New Jersey, by the way, beautiful place. And then you have somebody else that goes down there every weekend that pays a lot, that would then be somebody that is a rate payer. But so it is a nuance, but it's important that it's not taxpayers.
Right. But there's also a little nuance too, that you as the mayor, I'm not exactly sure, I think we're in charge of raising the rates on the meters, and you are in charge of the garages, or is it the opposite?
It's a bad system that never should have been designed this way, but city council handles the fines.
Right.
The mayor handles the meters.
Right.
And then the parking authority handles the garage or any of the off-street parking.
Right. So, my only concern is that we have a bone in that fight, you know, because if there's a struggle financially on the parking authority, city council is going to be asked to raise the fines, which we've done. I think I've done it twice in the 11 years I've been on council. And I think the mayor has been asked by the parking authority, not you, I'm not sure if you did it yet.
No, I did.
You did?
Yeah.
And I think Mayor Donches did it twice in 8 years.
I think President Leon wants to move on from this.
Yeah, I know. But
I just want to finish on that. It's like you don't raise rates to bring in money, you raise rates to increase parking turnover. So like the reason why we chose to raise rates and create the demand pricing for the first time was this idea that we were trying to create turnover. But I think it's an important thing that a lot of people think about with the parking authority. It's like, I got a ticket because they want money. Like Mr. Furnish from the parking authority would like it if they got no money other than what they needed to pay off their personnel and pay off the bonds. Like the meters and everything else are only designed to regulate how long people stay there. And it's an important distinction, because the parking authority doesn't look at it as like, how do we bring money in? Because nobody gets paid by commission. Their whole function, and this is why we went to demand pricing, we've done the electric, the signs outside the parking garage, is to be able to get long-term parkers into the long-term facilities and short-term parkers onto the street. It's not about the money. Sorry, President. No.
I just wanted to make sure that we're capping the actual steps, because we've talked a lot about parking. So I just want to make sure that we're talking about the committees, and we will have that conversation about how that's going to play out. And there are actionable steps. I have talked to the Parking Authority Director about that punch list and where they're at within that process. So there is something that has to play out, but we will have that conversation. So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, there is an actionable list that we will get to.
I'd like to have a sit down with council and the Parking Authority, and just let some grievances on our part that we hear on a regular basis from the Parking Authority. I mean, not just the gentleman, you know, that came in tonight, but
just to have a discussion with them.
Yeah, parking has been a topic of conversation quite a lot lately.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah,
thank
no
you.
Worries. All right, anyone else on Councilman Cole?
Thank you, President. As we talk about the parking authority, I just want to note two things. Not that I don't enjoy coming out for a committee meeting, but I'll have my council rules in front of me. I think the parking authority falls under community development by council rules rather than committee of the whole. And then also I would advise anyone, whether a member of the public, member of council, not that there's not merit to some of these conversations, that's for the at the committee level to figure out scheduling and agenda and such. But I think these should, maybe they already have, I don't know, should start at their board meetings, which are also public meetings. As a board of the city, which was already referenced, the parking authority operates kind of quasi-private, quasi-public, operates independently, as the mayor pointed out. The user fees are what pay the bills there. They have their own board that, you know, every so often we appoint the folks to the parking authority. So I think that if there's any issues, especially as it relates to potentially their procurement process or anything like that, which I have no insight to, but I think that, and maybe this, again, these conversations can already be happening. I hear they're happening with their executive director, but they also have a governing board that holds public meetings, I believe, once a month. So I would encourage anyone in this room, outside this room, to start any conversations there to their board.
Thank you. Any other council members have any business to address? Okay. All right, moving on to our communications. Communications,
February 4th, 2026 memorandum with an attached resolution from Public Works Director Michael Alcall. Mr. Alcall seeks authorization for the mayor and or other authorized city officials to execute documents required for the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation expansion of the Hilby Hill Bridge. The resolution also would authorize necessary rights of way and easements for the project.
Resolution 10A is on the agenda. Communication 6B.
February 10th, 2026 memorandum from Police Chief Michelle Cott with an attached resolution and agreement for the purchase of a duty weapon by a retired officer of the Bethlehem Police Department. Pursuant to the third class city code, retired officers may purchase their duty firearms at fair market value.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda. Communication 6C.
The February 11th, 2026 memorandum from City Solicitor John F. Spurk Jr. and an attached proposed right-of-way access agreement and resolution. Solicitor Spurk recommends the agreement with Greenlight Networks PA LLC to install fiber optic cables.
Resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 60.
The February 11th, 2026 memorandum and attached amendment to Bill Number 1226 from Lenny Lazarchak, Director of Budget and Finance. Ms. Lazarchak notes that the annual adjustment to the East Broad Street Corridor accounts in the non-utility capital improvements fund should be reduced by $30,000.
H.J. is on the agenda. Moving on to President reports. This is a reminder that the Committee of the Whole will meet on Tuesday, February 24th, 2026, for ethics training provided by the State Ethics Commission. This training session will be open to the public and will meet City Article 104. The meeting will be for informational purposes only and no action will be taken. The March 8th council meeting will be canceled. I will still be here for March 3rd canceling. The March 3rd council meeting will be canceled. I will still be here for President Hour, so if there's any community member with any concerns, I will be here, but the city council meeting for March 3rd will be canceled. Moving on to mayor's reports.
I have nothing, President.
Thank you. Moving on to committee reports, Councilman Cohen.
Thank you, President Leon. The Finance Committee will meet again on Tuesday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, at 6 p.m. here in Town Hall. Several budget adjustments will be discussed, including 2025 year-end reconciliations for the water and sewer funds.
Thank you, Councilman Cohen. Moving on to ordinances for final passage, I will accept the motion in a second to consider 8A through 8I.
Second.
Clerk will call the roll of the motion. Sorry, discussion on the motion.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Daniels?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Amen?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Passes 6-0.
8A, an ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2026. 8B, an ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2026. 8C, an ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2026. 8D, an ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2026. 8E, an ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2026. 8F, an ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2026. 8G, ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2026. 8H, ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the water fund budget for 2026. And 8I, an ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the Community Development Block Grant Fund for 2026. All bills are sponsored by Mr. Amen and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Daniels?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Amen?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 8J.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the Non-Utility Capital Fund for 2026. Bill number 12, 2026, is sponsored by Mr. Amen and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion. The clerk will call the roll.
An amendment, then?
Yeah. Do we have to move on to that? Sorry. Give me one second. I gotta read my script.
Thank you.
The amendment?
Yeah, the clerk will read the amendment to Bill 12-2026.
To be amended to read that total appropriations in the 2026 budget for non-utility capital fund be increased from $39,025,323 to $41,248,119. Sponsors are Mr. Amen and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Daniels?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Raymond?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Moving on to ordinances for new passage. There are no new ordinances.
Need to read as amended. 93 does 12 as amended. Now, can you read?
Point of order from it? Yeah, of course. Come on.
I apologize if I kind of lost. I wasn't sure of the procedure here. Did we have order? One order. Did we? Did we have a first and a second on the amendment before we voted on it?
So I'll turn to.
It's understood. Just what
it was noticed from the signature, so there was no need for a re-advertising.
I just want to make sure we're doing that.
Yeah.
Right. So now we read it as amended.
Read it as amended.
I believe.
The clerk will call
the roll on Bill
12-2026
as amended.
Or
read
it
as
amended.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Read it as amended. So we're voting on it as amended.
Voting on it as amended.
Yeah. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Daniels?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Amen?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Moving on to new ordinances. There are no new ordinances. Moving on to resolutions. Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute documents required by PennDOT to facilitate the Hill to Hill Bridge expansion project. Be it further resolved that the mayor shall sign any required documents to convey rights of way and easements related to the project. Resolution is sponsored by Mr. Amon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Daniels?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Amon?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement to effectuate the transfer of the city-issued handgun assigned to Captain Michael Leeser, a retired city police officer. Resolution sponsored by Mr. Amon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Daniels?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Nay.
Mr. Amon?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Passes 5-1. 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a right-of-way access agreement with Greenlight Networks PA LLC to install fiber optic cables. Resolution is sponsored by Mr. Amon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Daniels?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Amon?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10-D.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature Bethlehem Resolution is hereby granted for 33 West Walnut Street to construct a 7-story mixed-use building. The building's first floor will contain commercial, retail, restaurant, and or personal services spaces, and the upper floors will house 107 dwelling units. Resolution is sponsored by Mr. Amon and Ms. Kwiatek.
And before I turn to council for discussion, I'm going to turn to our solicitor to talk a little bit about these approvals for denial and if council does deny this, what we have to say. So if you will talk us through this a little bit.
Okay. Just a moment. So just a reminder, and maybe a refresh. Pursuant to Section 8004B of Pennsylvania's Municipal Historic Districts Law, when considering whether or not to grant a certificate of appropriateness, City Council shall pass upon the appropriateness of exterior architectural features, which can be seen from a public street or way only, and shall consider the general design, arrangement, texture, material, and color of the building or structure, and the relation of such factors to similar features of buildings and structures in the district. It shall not consider any matters not pertinent to the preservation of the historic aspect and nature of the district. Article 1713 of the city's codified ordinances establishing the HARB and related procedures say the same thing. Under subsections 11 and 14 of that article, when considering a COA, both HARB and council shall consider, consistent with Section 8004B of the Municipal Historic Districts Law, the effect of the proposed change upon the general historic and architectural nature of the district, and then the same language from 8004, the appropriateness of exterior architectural features which can be seen from a public street or way, the general design, arrangement, texture, material, and color of the building or structure, and the relation of such factors to similar features or buildings or structures in the district. Neither the statute or the ordinance with regard to council's consideration of the COA make any reference to Department of Interior standards, nor do they empower council to consider the height of the building on review of a COA. Height and other dimensional regulations, just a reminder, are found in our zoning ordinance and are regulated through that process. The other thing I wanted to say, there was a question this evening with regard to whether council can consider these recommendations by HARB, and HARB is a recommending body. It is a 9-member body, and a
until somebody new is appointed, the people who are on the board continue to serve. That's the way our various boards and commissions operate here in the city. So, irrespective of that, Article 1713 is very, very clear as to council's directive. Upon the receipt of a written counsel of the board, which you have received, council shall consider at a regular special meeting whether or not to grant a certificate of appropriateness pursuant to the standards that I've already read to.
And there were some questions about quorum, so if we can address those before we open it up to general counsel, we'll get that there. Solicitor Spurk, if you could weigh in on this as well, the question of quorum.
Would you like to go first?
Sure.
Since you're up, I was about to speak, but you're up, so.
The members hold until their replacement is named. Mm-hmm. So they can hold over beyond their term. And indeed, almost all of our authorities are like that. And the Municipal Authorities Act in Pennsylvania, state statute, provides that. And as your solicitor said, it's a recommendation only. They don't make binding decisions, of course.
All right, thank you for that. So I'm going to open it up to council for a discussion. Councilman Cohen.
Thank you, President Whale. Thank you, Solicitor Stewart and Solicitor Spurk. So just on that matter, I also want to point out, because it came up HARP specific, and as earlier, our Solicitor Stewart and I were having a little bit of a sidebar, which my understanding was what Mr. Spurk said, as someone who has previously served on different boards or waited to reappoint people. Sometimes we want to reappoint people in groups so the carryover members continue past their term. That's not atypical, as Mr. Spurk said. And related to the particular appointment which we were all handed earlier, as it outlines in the first sentence, this is a City of Bethlehem building inspector, which by Article 1713, a City of Bethlehem building inspector is required to be a board member for HARP. So by virtue of, they're going to stay on anyway, by the point of the ordinance, or presumably this particular inspector, but an inspector for the city. I had a couple questions for Ms. Collins, I believe, would be the most appropriate person. If you want to redirect me, Ms. Collins, by all means. I was not able to attend any of these meetings, but just can you give me, if you know exactly, or I know it wasn't a one meeting, plans were presented, they were voted on and approved. Can you give myself and the room just a little bit of background about what the process looked like for this particular COA application?
Sure. The process for this COA application actually a bit abnormal in the amount of dialogue that they had, you know, with the HARP in the public setting, also with HARB, with the community, with neighbors, even leading up to going before the board publicly. And we had talked about, you know, years ago when we were talking about an RFP, finding a trusted and qualified developer, that having those conversations and being engaged with the community was a pretty critical aspect of who we wanted to do the project. And I think we made a really great decision with this group. So starting, I would say, 2 years ago, the group was meeting with the neighbors. They were meeting one-on-one with folks who are immediately adjacent to the property. And then after they worked through some of that initial like listening to what would be good for their development, put forward some plans for HARB, had sit-down meetings with HARB to talk through the plans initially, which is, that's part of the process for more complicated projects for both HCC and HARB, or it can be, but you know, they met with all the members of the board, and then their first public meeting was in August of 2025. The second public meeting was in December of 2025, and then the third meeting was just earlier this month on February 4th. So through that process, you know, there were revisions to the plan. They were extremely responsive. HARB, after that first meeting in August, said, you know, hey, what can you do on the Walnut Street garage side to, you know, make it look, you know, what kind of trick can you do to make the eye pull down, essentially, and so that the building itself, even if it is seven stories, like how do you make it look a little bit smaller? They took a lot of feedback from the board, came back in December, At the December meeting, the board still had some questions about the western edge of the building, the part that you could see if you're walking up Walnut Street from Main. They got some feedback from the board about, you know, possibly, again, looking at step backs on that part of the building to reduce the overall look and feel of the building, as well as the actual height on that side. And then that's what they came back with in February and what the board ultimately recommended for approval for you guys.
And I know by zoning, the building could be up to 150 feet.
Correct.
Am I correct? And then the documents we received references 7 stories. Can you give me a ballpark of how high 7 stories is?
I can. It's a little complicated because of the grade.
Yep.
So there's different ways you can calculate. But so if you look at what the old garage was, like on the western end, which is kind of the tallest because of the way the grade falls, I believe that was about 71 feet. With their setbacks, what you're looking at the tallest part on the western side is, I think, 69 feet, 6 inches. But if you're calculating across with, I forget what it's called, like the average grade height of some kind based on the average slope, I believe it is, with a setback on the northern part, about 75 feet. And if you're doing the whole building, like even the part that's stepped back and you can't really see, I think it's about 86 feet.
Just to add to that, Mr. Clone, the setback we've seen in South Bethlehem, and you can see it now most prominently when you're driving down 3rd Street or going west and taking a look at the new banana factory. Banana factory brought to you by PP&L. Creative factory brought to you by PP&L. But when you're walking, when you're driving down 3rd Street, you don't even know the setback exists. And one of the things that the HEC has talked about is how important the setbacks have been. And it really gives you a different view as far as when you're driving down the street and you're next to the building. It's been a very important part of why the buildings in South Bethlehem have started to get much better reviews from the HCC is because of those setbacks. And I always add one thing to Ms. Collins is, so when this group first entered into their tentative contract or whatever with the Parking Authority, it wasn't, this is what we want to do. It was a question to us about what should we do and what do we need to do. And it was, who do we need to meet with, who do we need to talk to, and how often do we need to talk to them? And I would just say, because this might be a thing that comes up over and over again, both the HARB, and I hope everybody's had a chance to listen to some of the HARB meetings. If you haven't, I would if afterwards, because it really gives you an opportunity to see the evolution from the comments when they first went in August to what happened at the subsequent meetings, as far as like thank you for doing this and thank you for doing this and thank you for doing this, and that's a testament to their commitment to the process. If it was business owners, if it was neighbors, if it was HARB members, if it was the historic officer, it wasn't just meeting, but it was listening, and there's a difference there. And I think that you saw that in the HARB's recommendation was the fact that all of the things that they had suggested had made it into what the final product was. And that couldn't have happened in one meeting. They went to 3 meetings, but I think the first reach out, once they were initially designed a building ready to go, was almost a year ago. So it took months and months of meeting with people to make sure that it was right and make sure it was accurate and make sure it was what people were looking for. As I said, I think you saw that in the ultimate recommendation.
And do you have anything else for Tim, Ms. Collins? I don't have any other questions, thank you. I just wanted to say more broadly, I think this is how the process is supposed to play out. I won't reference the specific project because it's not relevant, but we had within the last year a project come before council that they had rejected, and at the time we decided we sent it back to HARB. They engaged with the applicant. It came back to council with HARB approval. So it's not as if in recent memory we have not engaged with HARB when they had negative support of a product. I don't know if that might be a double negative. Where they did support a project, that here they went to the applicant, had multiple meetings, and now it comes before us with a positive recommendation from HARB. So I just want to say I thank the volunteers at HARB for the engagement with the applicant and the applicant for their engagement with HARB so that everybody can come to where we are today with a support from HARB on this project. Thank you.
The company's building is Largan Associates. So I have nothing against Larkin Associates at all. I think the building, I think it's a beautiful building, to tell you the truth. From what I've seen it, you know, they've done a great job. And, I've been against this, everybody knows I've been against this project. Not because of Larkin, just because I don't think we should be selling historic Bethlehem land. I've said this in numerous meetings. The garage was and still is in the historic district. I'd have a problem if we were just selling city land. But the fact that it's historic Bethlehem land, I have a major problem with it, and I'm not going to support it. Again, it has nothing to do with Larkin. It has nothing to do with structure or the building itself. I think they did a great job with it. I just think it's in the wrong spot. And I don't think the city, I don't think we should ever be selling historic Bethlehem land. There's so little of it, you know, to begin with. So, Mayor, I just hope this is a real easy question. Did you ever take any campaign donations from anybody from Larkin?
You've asked this before, and the answer is no then, and the answer is still no.
I didn't ask that question about
Larkin. Yeah, you did.
Not about Larkin.
You did. You've asked me before. You go back and listen to meetings, and you asked me. You also said, let's wait to see what happens as far as whether or not any campaign contributions were considered.
Yeah, and did you, from anybody at Larkin, even like any associates there?
No.
Nobody. Okay.
I don't know who their janitors are, but I don't.
Call. Yeah. I'm just asking a quick question. Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments from council members?
Hi. Yes, I just want to ask Solicitor Stewart, are our views on the appropriateness of selling the land part of the process of, you know, appropriate things that we're supposed to consider when we're deciding whether or not to accept a recommendation from HARP?
No, you're looking at architectural features. You're looking at all of the things I already talked about, and of course 8004B says that you shall not consider any matters not pertinent to the preservation of the historic aspect and the nature of the district.
Thank you. And the reason I ask that is in terms of covering ourselves legally, if we were to make our decision based on things that were not in the statute, in the ordinance, and the developer, this is hypothetical, this could happen, you know, on any of these, if the developers, if the COA failed and the developer chose to, they could appeal and we could wind up being deposed and having our comments about how and why we voted on this considered in some kind of litigation. Is that correct? Do I have that right?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments from council members regarding this specific? Okay. I will say that my support of this comes from a very specific kind of conversation I had with someone I called the Secretary of the Interior Standards, which is under Parks Department. And they said when it comes to height, not only is that considered zoning, but if you were considering height within the historic district, as long as it's compatible, if carefully designed and visually subordinate, then it is an appropriate design, which I believe HARP has done in this specific case. I have not voted against our historic boards many a times. I think probably only one. I continue to support HARP. I do not believe they're kowtowed, as evident by some of the comments they made after our previous vote. So I believe that they've made this decision of sound mind and clear. I would say, this is an aside, if there are, I would like to see the boards beefed up to their capacity. If, like, I understand that these boards are hard to serve on. It's a lot for community members who are already doing a lot of things, but I would like to see the boards brought up to full complement. And if there's any desire for input from council for community members that we might know that want to serve, more than happy to slide some names over to the administration for anybody who might want to be considered for an authority board commission.
I don't think it's germane to everything that Ms. Stewart just said at the time, but as always, if there are names or resumes to pass along, we will certainly consider them.
I saw movements in that. Does anyone else have public comment they want to post?
I will just quickly say that to quote kind of what Harp said, I just think it they've done a really good job in terms of the building itself. I think it's beautiful. And at the same time, I would also say, you know, to Councilman Colon's point earlier about the parking authority and being almost like a quasi public-private partnership, and understanding Councilman Callahan's concerns as well. I'll just say I think this is a great example here from the mayor's office of a quasi public-private relationship, and seeing what happens when a private entity like Larkin Associates and the city get together and seeing something that and through HARP and seeing something that would really be a great project that looks great and fits downtown. And for that reason, I'm supporting it because I appreciate the way the process has been done.
There are no more comments from council members. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Daniels?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Raymond?
Aye.
Ms. Callahan?
Nay.
And Ms. Leon?
Passes 5-1, resolution 10-8.
Certificate of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem Resolution, hereby granted for 72 East Market Street to construct a stone fireplace surround with gas fireplace insert and construct a pergola to be painted a color to match the trim color of the main residence. Resolution is sponsored by Mr. Raymond and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Daniels?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Raymond?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10-F.
Certificate of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature of Bethlehem Resolution is hereby granted for 400 Main Street to replace existing slate shingles with new slate shingles, replace existing copper gutters and downspouts in kind, replace existing snow guards in kind, replace four eyebrow flat roof sections with new metal roofing, and replace horizontal wood siding in kind at the base of belfry. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Amon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Daniels?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Amon?
Aye.
Callahan.
Aye.
And Ms. Leon.
Aye. Passes 6-0. That concludes city business for tonight. Get home safe, everyone. Thank you.